Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to another edition of the Skating Penguin Network Mailbag. I am Garrett Bahana. Alongside me for this edition of the Mailbag is just one co-host. It is Snail this week. Robbie is unavailable to record. He will join us again next week as we have another Mailbag and preview the start of the 2023-24 season. But until then, we are answering more of your questions that you submitted to us earlier this week on Twitter. And Snail, let's just get right into it. We have quite a few questions this week from a couple of different question askers. Question number one will come from Brian, and it's talking about a player that was sent on waivers but ultimately cleared waivers, making him eligible to join the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, that being defenseman Ty Smith, one of the supposed prized pieces from the John Marino trade to the New Jersey Devils. Now looks like he's back in the AHL for the upcoming season. Snail, are you surprised that Smith cleared waivers and looks like he's destined for another season in the American Hockey League?
I'm not surprised at all. I mean, Ty Smith, like you said, was one of the bigger pieces in the trade for John Marino. Some of Hextall's handiwork there. last I checked, Marino's doing pretty good over there in Jersey. Ty Smith is clearing waivers, about to play another year in the AHL. Not surprised at all that he cleared. He's not fast. He's not defensively sound. I've kind of called him like a Z-list Quinn Hughes, but his career would be on the power play, but you have to like be in the lineup first and foremost to get on the power play, which he's not earning that spot. Read an article, I forgot who wrote it or who posted it, but the book is out on Ty Smith. He's not a very competitive guy, and when there's only essentially two pairings on a team like the Penguins have right now that are open, that there's open competition for. I mean, there's, you got P.O. Joseph battling for that, to anchor that left side. You got Ruedel. You've got Friedman, who can play the opposite. He's a right-handed shot. He can play the opposite side. They picked up that, his last name, Shea, from Dallas. That guy is a promising defenseman. I think he's left shot. I mean, dude, not surprised at all that he cleared. I don't think any other teams are, I don't know. I don't know what the market was before the Marino trade. I don't know if he was somebody, because I think he was a first round pick?
I believe he was. Let me look it up.
Yeah, I can't remember. I want to say he was a first round pick. If he's not, he's probably a second rounder. No, yeah. Anyways, not super surprised. I mean, he's been down in the AHL marinating for a year. And
Ty Smith, he was drafted 17th overall in the 2018 NHL draft.
17th overall, dang. Okay, well, yeah, I don't know. Not super shocked that he cleared waivers, and I'm sure that's probably not the last time he'll be put on waivers this year. So until he can go down and prove otherwise, he'll probably stay down there in the jungle, as they call it. We'll move on here. So let's see. Next question is from Logan Krenke. Which defense and which forward has been the most impressive in training camp?
I'm not going to put too much stock into training camp performances, but the fact that Erik Karlsson, will start with defense. Erik Karlsson seems to be earning high praise every time he's on the puck. It looks like his instincts that have followed him from Ottawa to San Jose have transformed, carried over, however you want to describe it, very well into the Penguins system, having to come over and sort of gel with some new superstar teammates. And he's expected to sort of man that power play one unit. It looks like every time Karlsson's out on the ice, he is able to continuously move the puck into the offensive zone, take shots. He's not afraid to take shots either. So, again, it's preseason performances. I know there have already been concerns about the power play and how it's looked in preseason. That's another big question mark we have about this team heading into the regular season. And Karlsson will be a large cog in that wheel responsible for the power play's success. But it looks like Karlsson has adjusted quite well in terms of, you know, coming over from San Jose and sort of beginning to mesh well with the other superstars on this team and other good defensemen on this team, like Chris Letang and Marcus Pettersson. In terms of forwards, I see a lot of people singing the praises of Radim Zahorna coming back into the Penguins organization after a brief absence last season with a couple of different teams. But it seems like Zahorna is really fighting. There may not be too many open roster spots here in the bottom six. The top six, I would imagine, is just about solidified, even with Jake Guentzel's injury. But Radim Zahorna, and Snail, I think you mentioned it on the last podcast, we know the kind of player he is in terms of height and weight. He is a massive frame at 6'6", 220 or 230, but he doesn't play like this big bruising forward. He plays with a lot of finesse, and you don't really see that from players of his size. He's certainly not afraid to shoot the puck and try and contribute offensively, which, you know, we saw that in his first go around with the Penguins. So I would not be opposed to Zahorna earning a bottom six role based on some of his preseason and training camp performances. But again, I'm not going to put too much stock into it. I'll see when the final lineup comes out after all the preseason games have been played and we get our first glimpse at that 23-man roster heading into opening night against the Blackhawks. Then I will be more inclined to put more analysis into each individual player and how they earned that spot from training camp and preseason. But between Karlsson's arrival and his ability to mesh relatively well with his new teammates, and Radim Zahorna looking like he is really hungry to earn a spot in that bottom six, I'll say both of those players have done relatively well given both of their unique sets of circumstances. question. This next question comes from Brian for you, Snail, and it's a fashion question. Who is your vote for the best dressed in the league? Brian thinks David Pastrnak and Austin Matthews are his vote.
My vote is whoever looks the most comfortable. I think the dress code is ridiculous. I think that these guys are going to play hockey. It's a physical game, mentally challenging game. You know, I could imagine there's a lot of stress, especially for some of these third and fourth liners, depth guys. You know, they're more in like it's a lot more physical for them. So I'm thinking, dude, just let these guys wear some shorts and sweats and some Crocs to the games. But that's not how it is. So I don't know. Yeah, Pasta. I guess for flashiness, Pasta's got to be. I mean, he makes a spectacle. It seems out of every game up there in Boston. So I'm not going to agree with Austin Matthews. I don't like that guy. So I'll just say Pasta. let's see. Next question here is from Woody. Would you like to see Jagr come to the Penguins games and be around the team more? I think it'd be awesome.
It would be awesome. I agree. We've talked on this podcast before about jersey retirements, and Jagr's jersey retirement is confirmed. We know that he has had discussions with the Penguins about coming back into Pittsburgh. It seems like those frosty relations have warmed a little bit in recent years between the fans and Mario Lemieux and management. And now with Mario Lemieux not being a majority owner and Fenway Sports Group owning the team, I'm not going to say that's going to change at all. I think having Jagr back in some form or fashion in the organization would be beneficial. You're talking about one of the greatest players of all time alongside Mario Lemieux, one of the greatest Pittsburgh Penguins in history. And we know his jersey retirement, like I mentioned, is just about confirmed. He's still playing in his native Czech Republic, and he's still playing for the team that he has ownership of. So as long as he continues to play professionally, that jersey retirement is just going to keep getting pushed back. But absolutely, the jersey retirement will happen. Jagr will return to Pittsburgh. And I think that night that he does, when he is celebrated and honored, it will be a very memorable night. I think a lot of former Penguins alumni from Mario's generation, the late 80s, early to mid 90s, and you know, a lot of those players have since come back and have been welcomed back with open arms. Jagr being one of the more prolific players who had some ups and downs with the Penguins during his tenure. Like I mentioned, I think those relations have since, you know, been mended. Those fences have been mended, and it's just a matter of time before Jagr officially hangs up the skates for good, well into his 50s now. But when that day does come, I think it will be quite the spectacle, and it will be well-deserved for number 68. All right, the next question is from Tony Gale. Caught my first Pens game last Christmas flying over from the UK. All right, we have a UK listener. I think this is the first time Tony has asked a question on the podcast, which is awesome. I personally want to go over to the UK. That is on my personal bucket list. Back to Tony's question. He caught his first Penguins game flying over from the UK to watch the Penguins lose to the Devils and the Red Wings. Watching the trio on the ice was a delight, Tony says. If I could ever afford to return, what opponent gives the best atmosphere at PPG Paints Arena? And Tony ends his question with a nice note that he loves the podcast. So, Snail, I know you're in the PNW, but, I mean, you're no stranger to watching games on TV. What do you think, sure, looking at this question? Which team gives the Penguins the best fight? The Penguins really get up for those kinds of games.
Well, right now, I think it's, again, you could probably add way more to this because you go to PPG way more often than I've never been to PPG. But I would have to say, just from what I see on TV, it's got to be the Capitals, because I would say Philly, but they're in a rebuild right now. They're not looking to be relevant anytime soon. They're finally tearing it down. But I would have to say it's the Capitals. I mean, last season, every year, last year the Caps were not a playoff team either, and the Penguins were kind of, there was still games to be won and meaning behind the games they were playing when they were playing the Caps, and those were some fun games to watch. I think if it's not the Caps right now, Rangers. Oh, Rangers too, maybe. I think that just because of that one playoff series 2 years ago with Trouba giving Sid the, I mean, there's still some grudge held there. And from what, maybe those are the games that I just get the most hyped up for. But what about you, Garrett? I'd like to hear what you think.
You mentioned the Capitals, and that was my first thought. For however long Crosby and Ovechkin have been intertwined, whether it's in Washington, D.C. or Pittsburgh, that rivalry has defined this generation. And it's defined the careers of both of these men. It has perhaps been the most memorable rivalry, because it's Ovechkin and Crosby have been so intertwined for so long, and two greats of all time. I think that Capitals, absolutely. That's my first answer. That's going to be my only answer. You mentioned Philadelphia, but like you said, they're in a rebuild. For my money, if you're seeing a game for the first time, I hope while they're still playing, while they're still active, it's Crosby and Ovechkin. So I'll go with the Capitals for that answer as we move on to the next question.
Quickly, do you think that you would have a little bit more buy? Like, would you say maybe Philly had Claude Giroux stuck around in Philly?
Boy, that Philadelphia, speaking of Claude Giroux and the Flyers, that Philadelphia playoff series in 2012, that was another, like, generation-defining moment, at least for my fandom. We know now that the Penguins, it didn't benefit the Penguins all that well, and they sort of melted down. But even if Giroux hadn't stayed in Philly, that rivalry, when it was at its peak, yeah, it was both of those teams. I mean, both of those teams hated each other. You saw some of the most emotion from Sidney Crosby in post-game scrums whether Philadelphia would knock Pittsburgh off or vice versa. And Crosby is historically a rather stoic individual, but for him to give off some of that fiery emotion after games, you rarely saw that from some of the other teams that he played. So
was that the series where he was in the post-game scrum and he was like, I don't like them?
Yes,
and he was just like, I don't like him.
I couldn't think of the quote exactly, so I didn't want to bring it up. But that's, yes, I am thinking of that exact moment. That's what I based this answer off of, because I'll never forget that. Like, that is some of the fieriest I have ever seen Crosby in a post-game scrum. And again, that goes to define that rivalry, that cross-state rivalry between the Penguins and the Flyers.
Yeah, spicy stuff there. Philly back then, but they're not relevant anymore. So, Tony, I'd have to say, if you're coming over across the pond, check out the Caps in PPG. Next question here is from Woody, and he asks, what baby Pens players do you guys feel have the best chance to make the big team?
Well, before the preseason and training camp started, I maybe would have said Alex Nylander, but now I'm not so sure. Looking at some of the projected lineups, because nothing has been finalized yet. Would you classify Radim Zahorna as a baby Penguin? I don't know if I would at this point. A lot of these guys who are on the roster are NHL mainstays. If you're looking for a baby Penguin and you say which Penguin is most likely to join the big club on a permanent basis, maybe it depends on the kind of start that Sam Poulin gets off to. We know he was out for a lot of action last year dealing with some personal issues. Now he looks to be back on track. I would be really intrigued to see what Sam Poulin would offer. I think he's heading into his age 22 or 23 season, so he's not really a fresh-faced rookie anymore. He's gotten some seasoning at the AHL level, and I'd be curious to see. He played in one game, I believe, at the NHL level. It was a brief cameo because of injury issue. But now that Poulin is back, looks like he's in a better headspace professionally and personally. That would be one of the players that I would have my eye on as the season progresses. I don't think Poulin is going to make the opening night roster, but perhaps he is one of those players that earns a call-up when injury dictates. Because if you know anything about the Penguins, you know that they're going to be dealing with their fair share of injuries as the season moves along. So I'd keep my eye out for Sam Poulin to see if he can finally make an impact at the NHL level. Question number 8 comes from Woody. I live in South Carolina, and I have gone to Carolina to watch them play. I believe Snail is in Seattle, which is correct. Snail, have you or will you go watch the Penguins when they come to a city near you?
So, yeah, I saw the Penguins in the Kraken's inaugural season. I saw Sid and the boys come to town. Gino was absent, actually, from that game. He was still dealing with the ACL. And then I didn't see them last year, but I got my partner actually got tickets for us to go see the Penguins here in Seattle on February 29th. So going to get to see Sid and Gino for the first time in person come to town. So that'll be awesome. I missed last year, but I would like to try to catch them every season. I got to be totally honest, though. Maybe I'm lame, but I kind of like watching games at home. Like, I like going to see games live. But, like, dude, a best seat in the house is my couch with whatever snacks I got. I can go to the back. I can go grab a beer from the fridge. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of a homebody now as I'm getting older.
I'm definitely right there with you.
It's a lot to get down to the Seattle traffic is... like probably every other like urban area, traffic sucks and Seattle's hectic. It's the Kraken are relatively new here, so they're kind of like the big show in town right now. But definitely planning to see them this year. Shout out my partner for hooking up the tickets for my birthday. Alrighty. Let's see here. Next question is from Woody again. Woody asks simply, do you think any team will pick up Phil Kessel?
Isn't it surprising now? We're well into October. The regular season's about to begin, and Phil Kessel is not on an NHL roster. I don't know if Kyle Dubas has come out professionally and said it on the record, but I don't think the Penguins are interested in Kessel's services. I'm surprised. I don't even know if he has a PTO, if he ever signed a professional tryout contract with any team.
So he was at Vegas's captain skate before the preseason started, which he was wearing his Vegas gear and everything, but he was just a guest skating. He was just with the boys skating around. So, you know, he's in he's skating, at least staying in whatever shape Phil Kessel stays in the off season. I'm shocked that there's nothing. I'm wondering.
Yeah, I'm shocked too.
As you see here under my name, I have Bring Phil Home. I would love for Dubas should just come out and just say we're not interested. Cause I think a lot of us are kind of keeping wondering. It's could we be reunited with Kessel?
There's a small sliver in me, the fan in me, that wants it to happen. But the more and more I look at it with my, take my tinfoil hat off and look at it through the eyes of an analyst, if you want to even call me that. I don't think it's going to happen. Kyle Dubas has gone out of his way to construct this roster in his vision. And that vision doesn't include Phil Kessel. I want it to happen. I think Phil Kessel can still give you 15-ish goals, maybe 20 goals. We know that the aging curve hasn't really been kind to him. It's been said here and there that, he's Phil Kessel. He's built that reputation over years and years of being in the league. We know, even from his time in Pittsburgh, he may not be the most competitive guy, but you're not signing him to go dig and get dirty and be a mucker grinder in the corners and scoop out pucks. You're not signing Phil Kessel for those reasons. You're signing him to put the puck in the net. And while he won't do it on a 35, 40 goal pace anymore, I still think there's something valuable there. And that's why I'm just so surprised that there are 31 other teams in the league besides the Penguins. You mean to tell me that the 31 other teams have players who are better than Phil Kessel, even at 35, 36 years old? I find that hard to believe. So, maybe he's just looking for the right opportunity, Maybe he doesn't have really any suitors. Maybe the suitors that he does have are rebuilding teams, perhaps like the Flyers or the Anaheim Ducks or the San Jose Sharks. I think at this point he wants to be with a contender. Maybe the contenders don't want Phil Kessel. There are questions that we just don't have answers to. But all of that is to say, yeah, I'm still surprised that Phil Kessel is unsigned.
I'm thinking it's going to be if anybody signs him, which this Phil would have to be okay with this because the team that I'm going to say is Minnesota. I think him and Billy G, I think Phil is like a Bill Guerin type of guy.
That really fit. Like, I did not think of Minnesota at all before you said that. Now, like, when you said that, I was like, you know what? Like, for a bit of veteran-ish leadership, and, you know, like I said, I still think he can give you 15 goals, maybe 30-ish, 40-ish points.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think that would be – I can really envision Phil in a Minnesota Wild jersey now that you said that.
He's a Wisconsin guy. I think he played for the Minnesota Golden Gophers in college. I don't know, like closer to home. But we all know that Phil nixed that trade for Zucker, though, with Jim Rutherford?
That was Rutherford. Yeah, that was a Rutherford move.
Different time, though. And I think the other reason that this fits so well is because Minnesota is still struggling with the Parise and Suter buyouts. I think it's like $14 million on their cap, just dead space.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of dead cap, dead cap for the foreseeable future.
And Phil, he's made his money. He's won his cups. Billy G should just give him whatever shekels are left in the bank account and 750 or whatever the league minimum is. And I don't know, stick him on a, he could be in the top six. I think Phil right now, even with his decline, he's like the perfect third line right wing. He's not as fast as he used to be, but he's got speed in general. You know, he's not Carter out there. He's still got quick feet. He's got a snappy little wrist shot still. The thing is that he's just not physical. He's never been a physical guy. And like right now with third liners, fourth liners, you kind of need to expect, you know, they want you to those lines are to grind down other teams, hold on to pucks. Phil's just never really had that, but you never know. He's said that he's down he's willing to forego his Iron Man streak. Maybe he'll put his body on the line a little bit more. He wants to play. So someone out there, if it's not Pitt, I could see Minnesota. I'd hate to see Phil be forced to hang him up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd like to have for my fandom sake, I would love to have Phil go out on his own terms, rather than, like you say, be forced to retire because no one's interested.
Jeff Carter on the Penguins, man, I swear that guy is just taken up a spot. If we didn't have Jeff Carter, and like I gotta be honest, like we're hard on Jeff Carter. I mean, he has been serviceable at times. When we first got him, I was like,
he was fantastic when we first
got him. Oh yeah, he was really good. But I just think he's taken up a spot. I think there's so many other guys I'd like to see get a chance over Carter. And if he's what's keeping Dubas from bringing Phil back home, I don't know. Shaking my head at that. We can put a bow on this, though. I'll stop ranting.
Well, we'll put a bow on it. We will go to our next question. Our next question comes from Woody. What team do you feel will be better this year? The Ottawa Senators, the Buffalo Sabres, or the Detroit Red Wings? If Buffalo gets the goaltending help that they need, Woody believes they could be much better. I think all three of these teams in the Eastern Conference may have a shot at the postseason. What do you think, Snell?
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Definitely. I think Ottawa is set to... I mean, they've got all their guys signed. They're all high picks. They're actually putting first rounders on waivers because they're trying to get other guys signed. They just got a, I don't know, sometimes I wonder about that coach up there, DJ Smith. He's been with them for a while, and they just haven't been able to start off hot enough and keep momentum. I think Buffalo is going to be good this year. That is a talented young team, and they play exciting. They score a ton. They got big bodies. They got Tuck Tage Thompson. They got that exciting new goalie, Devin Levi. I think that out of the three, I think Buffalo is going to be not just like sniffing around the playoffs. I think that they're going to be well in the playoffs, probably hold that position all year, and they're going to be a playoff mainstay for a really long time. Detroit, no. I'm a no on Detroit. I think that the Iser plan is going askew, and I think that they're not in a position to be sniffing around much of anything.
Between the three, Ottawa was, if this was my question, Ottawa would have been my pick between the three. I think they have a great mix of veteran leadership with Giroux up there, Shabbat.
Tarasenko.
Tarasenko. We'll see what kind of shape Tarasenko's in. They signed him to a hefty one-year deal. I think it was 1 year, $5 million. But they have a great mix of young, hungry guys who are eager and capable, great veteran leadership. I think all of it is really coming together. The Senators have had a rough stretch of years since losing to the Penguins in that Eastern Conference final. It was like from that point onward, they entered that rebuild, and they shipped off Carlson, and they went down. But now I really think the Senators are on their way up. I would not be surprised to see the Senators fighting for a playoff spot, one of the final playoff spots in the Eastern Conference this year.
Agreed. Safe to say, I think we're both high on Ottawa. I'm really high on Buffalo. Detroit, I think we could agree Detroit's not quite there. Don't really know what's going on in Detroit with that Iser plan, but anyways, we'll move on here to another question from Woody. Woody asks, if the Penguins get off to a bad start in their first 25 games, do you believe Dubas will fire Sullivan? Woody says that he hopes Sullivan is on a short leash. He does not understand how Mike Tomlin getting some shrapnel, how Tomlin and Sullivan keep their jobs.
That is some, not friendly fire, but yeah, shrapnel is the perfect way to describe that. Just throwing that in, just like, it was an unnecessary shot at Mike Tomlin, but I love it because sounds like, and then in addition to being a Penguins fan, Woody is a Steelers fan. I am a Steelers fan myself, so I understand the anger and frustration in Woody's tweet. But going back to Mike Sullivan here, I mean, the Penguins would have to get off to a disastrous start. We may have mentioned it earlier on in the offseason, but FSG, Fenway Sports Group, has their faith in Mike Sullivan. I think Kyle Dubas has a lot of faith in Mike Sullivan. I see a lot of people on social media maybe sometimes get tired of coaches being in the same place for a long time. Sullivan, I don't know if he's the longest tenured head coach in the NHL right now, but he has to be up there.
He's almost. I think the longest tenured is Cooper in Tampa Bay.
You know what? You're probably right. I don't have that data in front of me, but I would not be surprised if you're right about that. So Sullivan being here for as long as he has the championships. You can't take those away from him. But I think hockey coaches are notorious. It's almost like they have a shelf life compared to maybe other coaches in other professional sports. Whereas, you know, maybe football coaches, NFL coaches stay for longer periods of time than NHL coaches do. Whatever the case may be, I can understand there being some frustration because veteran head coaches are set in their ways. They're often stubborn to adapt. And I know I saw some of that personally, looking through social media over the last couple of years under the Hextall regime, Sullivan putting Jeff Carter out there in key situations with like 2 minutes left where the Penguins needed a goal, and Brian Dumoulin out there, you're thinking, why are these pylons out there who can't skate? Why are they out there with 2 minutes left when you need to tie the game at three and you're down a goal with the extra man? That makes no sense. So I can understand from that perspective why you're frustrated, but again, it would have to be a monumental collapse. There's a lot of positivity. There's a lot of hype surrounding this Penguins team. I don't think it's Stanley Cup hype, but it doesn't have to be Stanley Cup hype, in my opinion. There is a lot of excitement because this team, the last two seasons, two plus seasons under Ron Hextall, have been an unmitigated disaster. You have a fresh-faced Kyle Dubas coming in here, erasing basically all of the mistakes of the Hextall regime and giving this franchise new blood with the acquisition of Erik Karlsson. And that's going to trickle down to Mike Sullivan and the players. At least I think it will. Everyone is excited. Everyone thinks, and I think, that this team will be a playoff contender. I think they will get back into the playoffs by the end of this regular season. And Mike Sullivan will continue to be that bench boss to lead the Penguins into the postseason. Whether they win a first-round series, that's a conversation for April of 2024. But until then, I'm buying into the hype train. I am excited about what's to come and the possibilities of what we can do now with a revamped team, the acquisition of Karlsson, and that's going to start with Coach Sullivan and trickle its way down into the players. So, again, it would have to be a monumental collapse.
I like the confidence, but I've got a tinfoil hat on almost at all times, and I got to be totally honest with you. This is what I think could happen. I don't want it to happen, but I've been watching these preseason games, and I'm seeing a lot of the same shit, the same bad habits. And I don't want it to be, but I think it's a symptom of Sullivan's system. This is what I think could happen. If the Penguins are a gas can and soil themselves in the first 25 games, if by Thanksgiving they're not even close to a wild card, I think Sullivan resigns. He doesn't get fired. I think he resigns. And you know what spot is currently open in Penguins management? General manager position. Mike Sullivan was part of the search for the next GM. He helped pick Dubas. So I think, and like you said, which I don't disagree with, Sullivan has the confidence of the Penguins organization. What I'm blanking on their name all of a sudden. I wanted to say FFSN.
yeah, plot twist. We're just putting out a podcast for the Penguins. We own the team now.
Exactly. No. You say FS. What is it again?
Fenway Sports Group.
Fenway Sports Group. God. All right. So Fenway, Boston, Mike Sullivan, Boston guy. They love him. They have their confidence in him. I think if they're, like I said, they soil themselves by American Thanksgiving, Sullivan resigns. Maybe Mike Vellucci steps up. Todd Reardon's gassed. Sullivan steps into the general manager position under Dubas because they think alike. They like each other. I think Dubas would have fired Sheldon Keefe in Toronto if Sullivan had ever become available. That's just my tinfoil hat theory, but you got to admit, it's a little like, what do you think?
That's major tinfoil hat territory that I would not dare enter that kind of tinfoil hat territory. I like it because it's tinfoil hat territory, and it's just so out there. It's too out there for me. it would be so weird, wouldn't it? Don't you think? Like he goes from he goes from head, like it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility if he went from head coach to general manager. I mean, because I like technically that is a promotion, but then like so, I mean, you do say Vellucci could slide in there, become the head coach. I mean, all of the pieces are there for that to make sense, but I mean, like I said, I can't.
Vellucci had interest at the end of last year. There were teams sniffing around on Vellucci, but I think Sullivan picked Vellucci for a reason. I think that Vellucci's been a coach a long time. I think it's probably his turn to get a shot in the NHL, and who better than the Penguins? I think he has a rapport. I think Ricard Raquel played for him when he was in juniors. I think there's a couple other players that have had Vellucci in there in the past. I don't know, man. It just seems it's a puzzle piece that just seems to fit. I think Dubas is keeping a seat warm for Sully when he if things go south.
If this happens, I will like personally fly to Seattle and give you a check for like $5,000. And I'm not like the amount of things that would have to happen for this whole scenario to play out like you have envisioned it. I would just be...
Would you soil yourself?
You know what? I'd soil myself and I'd record myself doing it.
Oh, man. If that happened, you heard it here first.
And, you know maybe that's not for, like, for YouTube consumption, me soiling myself. Maybe that's just for, like, the private group chat that we have. But
yeah, just the group chat. It'd be great YouTube content.
Absolutely. I would absolutely soil myself and put it on video.
If that happens, could you imagine? What if it just starts unraveling? Like, it's like November 10th and it's just like, uh-oh, like there's some rumblings, there's some rumors, there's some tough post-game scrums. And then Thanksgiving weekend, it's like Sullivan steps down. He's like, I think these guys, he pulls a, what's his name? The guy in Winnipeg. He's like, I think these guys need a new voice.
He steps.
The coach, the guy who's the coach of the Panthers now.
Was he the coach in Winnipeg?
He was the coach in Winnipeg. Now he's head coach in Florida.
I'm blanking.
I'm totally blanking on his name, but it starts with an M, I think. This is going to bug me.
Paul Maurice.
Yeah, Mo said that. He stepped down. He's like, I think these guys need a new voice, and he bailed and then got a job in Florida. I think Sullivan's like, new voice, Volucci's, it's his turn. Maybe a couple weeks of silence, and then all of a sudden Dubas has an announcement for everybody at the beginning of maybe right before Christmas break.
There's your Christmas present. Sullivan becomes the general manager and Volucci becomes the head coach. Oh God, that's so crazy, but I love it because it's so crazy.
Well, like I said, you heard it here first if that happens. But let's hope it doesn't. Let's just hope that, like, all the habits are, like, miraculously fixed and Carlson has 101 points and these guys are in a never out of a wild card or playoff spot the whole season.
All right, we'll close it up. The last question here for you, Snail, comes from Woody. Do you want to see Alex Ovechkin break Wayne Gretzky's all-time goals record? Woody does want to see it. I wish Mario would have stayed healthy so badly because he would have been called the great one instead of Wayne Gretzky.
So I don't think he would have been called the great one instead of Gretzky. This is a dumb thing to pick apart, but I think, wasn't he called like the magnificent one?
He was French Canadian and they called him Le Magnifique.
Le Magnifique. I love that. But also because the great one, I think it's like, it starts with a G like Gretzky. And then the magnificent one, it's an M, it's Mario. I think magnificent is better than great. So yeah, I wish that Mario stayed healthy too. He would have
eviscerated some of Gretzky's still standing records. I don't know if he gets the goals record. I don't know how many off the top of my head. I don't know how many goals Lemieux finished with career wise, but absolutely he would have, if he stays fully healthy, he would have eviscerated some of those records.
Oh yeah. If you look at the, I mean, I'm not the biggest like analytics guy. I'm not the biggest numbers guy. But if you look at the, I mean, he wasn't trending down for quite a while. He was pretty consistent. I want to see Ovi break Gretzky's record. Maybe that sounds weird coming from a Pens fan, but I'm first and foremost a huge fan of hockey and the sport in general. And Ovi, just historically, man, he's played the game how I think the game should be played. He's tough as nails. I know Garrett will cringe at this, but he's not afraid to drop. He's a captain, dude. That guy will drop the gloves if he needs to. He's been crushing and hitting dudes his whole career, putting up 30, 40, 50 goals. I mean, just the great eight, man. So, like, he deserves it, I think. He's just played the game the right way for so long. And I think I'm glad it's like Ovi and not some, it's not like Austin Matthews, some cocky shit who dresses all flamboyant. I'm glad it's Ovi, just a specimen, dude. He does, the Russian machine truly does never break. Those are my thoughts on Ovi beating Gretzky's record. And I'll pass it over to you, Garrett, because I'm curious what you think.
I don't think there's any shame because in admitting that you want to see this record broken, because I do too. I want Ovechkin to do it. I think Ovechkin, I'm not just saying this because of recency bias, Ovechkin will go down as the greatest pure goal scorer of all time. I think he will eventually get that record. And I am hoping that he does. As a Penguins fan who has, like I mentioned earlier in this podcast, with Ovechkin and Crosby being intertwined for their entirety of their careers, as a Penguins fan, you don't want to see your rival do something of all-time significance. But at this point, if there's one person to break Wayne Gretzky's goal record, I want it to be the greatest goal scorer to ever play the game. And my opinion will never be swayed. Again, call it recency bias, call it whatever you want to. Alex Ovechkin is the greatest goal scorer in NHL history.
Agreed. Just right, like, dude, you can just put him down for what, like 35 goals a year minimum?
Yeah, absolutely minimum.
And it's not like a lot of them aren't bouncing it off his ass, or they're not like chintzy goals. They're just intentional, just rockets from his office.
When Washington eventually erects the statue of Ovechkin, I want it to be him, like you say, in his office on that. He's on that left circle, just charging it up for. I want that. That should be the pose for Alex Ovechkin's statue. There's no doubt in my mind. Maybe that's finalized. I don't follow the Capitals that closely for obvious reasons. But if there is one statue for Alex Ovechkin, it's him charging up a one-timer from his office on that left circle. That stance defines Alex Ovechkin.
So I'm going to ask you this quick. I actually had this written down for a question I would pose to you guys a couple pods ago, but do you think after Sid and Ovi retire, are their numbers retired league-wide, you think?
League-wide jersey retirements are... I mean, the number 8 is so... I think it's not like... it's so hard to say. I'm not a big fan of league-wide number retirements. I don't know if Lemieux is ever going to have his number retired league-wide, but what you do see is guys actively stay away from it. I don't know anybody who actively wears number 66 in the NHL. And there was that controversy a few years ago with Islanders prospect Josh Hosang, when he came up, he was wearing 66. I mean, I think he was wearing 66 to honor the legacy of Mario Lemieux. But I think he was told, I don't know if Lou Lamoriello was in New York at the time.
He was
told to like pick a different jersey number because nobody actively wears 66. I don't think anybody in the league actively wears 87. I mean, those numbers are so synonymous with those players. So I don't think you'll see league-wide retirements, but I think you'll see this like unofficial thing where some guys stay away from it and don't wear those numbers because, you know, they still respect the legacy and tradition of the guys like Crosby and Lemieux who are synonymous with their jersey numbers. When you think of 87, what do you think of? You think of nothing but Sidney Crosby. That's the point I'm trying to make. Guys are going to respect that legacy of what came before, and I don't think they're going to actively wear that jersey number.
I agree. There is almost like an unspoken rule already in the NHL, I think. But if you remember, I think when Vegas came into the league, they had, I think he's actually currently the all-time leading goal scorer in the KHL. His name was Vadim Shipachev. He came in and wore 87. And I just remember being so cheesed at that. I was like, come on, man. You're not supposed to wear. And then I saw a guy in training camp, I was watching a preseason game. I can't remember what team. It wasn't the Penguins, but someone had 87. It's funny because 87, I don't know if you've heard this before, but like training camp numbers, I know that 87 is like Sid's birthday.
Yeah.
But like 87 is like that's like a awkward large number that is like that's probably one that typically would just get handed to someone. I don't think it's, at this point, it would have to be intentional if you wore 87, I think. And 8's a pretty popular number. I don't know. I think I could see, I could see them being retired league wide. I wouldn't put maybe money on that, but I think once Sid and just what they meant to hockey for the whole duration of their careers, there's arguments that other people should have their numbers retired league-wide, like Mario. I think that's a whole debate, but I don't know. I wouldn't be totally shocked if it happened one day.
I wouldn't be either, but again, like I said, I wouldn't be shocked by it, but I just don't think it's going to happen. I'm honestly not surprised that Gretzky is retired league-wide. He's the only number that's retired league-wide. And, you know, he did go down with, like, he was the face of hockey for, and as me saying that as a Penguins fan, while Lemieux was actively playing against him, Gretzky was the face of the NHL throughout the 80s and 90s. So, you know, that in addition to the records that he ended up breaking, I see why that number was retired. But again, I'm just personally not in favor of league-wide jersey retirements. Jackie Robinson in Major League Baseball. Okay, that makes sense. There is a historical aspect to that that will never be duplicated, can never be duplicated ever again, because of Robinson breaking that color barrier and the reputation that came along with that all those years ago. So I understand it from that perspective, you know, why nobody deserves to wear that 42 because of that significance. But other than that, you know, unless you're talking about historical accuracy, or not historical accuracy, but historical perspective. And there is some historical perspective because Gretzky, you know, accomplished so much and toppled so many previously untouched records. But maybe it's just a weird thing I have about not wanting to retire jerseys league-wide. I don't know if that point that I just made comparing Jackie Robinson's retirement to Wayne Gretzky's retirement, I don't know if there's any real connection or leverage there between those two different scenarios, but I hope that point came across why I think Robinson's jersey deserved to be retired in Major League Baseball, whereas I'm not so convinced that Gretzky's number had to be retired.
No, I agree. The significance is just like different levels of like meaning behind it. Gretzky was just like the best player that had been on the ice at that point. And you know what I mean? And Jackie Robinson, the 42, that represents a whole thing bigger than the sport.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. It's bigger than the sport itself. And so from that perspective, I understand why it was done.
Yeah, and I could see, yes, with that logic, it's like, why would Sid and Ovi's numbers get retired league-wide? They're two amazing players, but I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Gary Bettman has something up his sleeve for that when it happens, but we don't have to think about that for a while because they're both under contract for a little while longer. And yeah, we'll see. Dude, Ovi might get close this year. He might, if he stays healthy.
It's less than 100, isn't it? It's like
70 goals until he 70 something until he ties it, I think.
Yeah, if he's healthy, maybe by the middle of next season.
I mean, if he goes off, what if he scores 50 this year or something crazy? Which I don't know. Until he proves me he can't.
Yes, exactly. I don't put it past him to score 50. Don't, you know, I will never bet against Alex Ovechkin for the goal scoring race. Absolutely not.
It'll be like Bonds breaking the home run record every game. Yeah. When he gets close, it's not going to be the same. Remember when Bonds was break like all the flashes of the camera every pitch?
I mean, that was before my time.
Was it?
I think you're obviously a little bit older than me, so you probably remember it better than I do. What year that was off the top of your head?
2000, it had to have been like 2003.
I would have been 4 or 5 years old at that point. So that definitely is not in my memory as a sports fan, but I still understand the legacy and importance behind that moment, because I agree. I think you'll see, like, when he gets to that point, when he gets to within like 5 goals, you'll see like ESPN cut away from coverage.
Oh, yeah, that'll be awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely going to happen.
I loved that. When Bonds was getting close to that record, I was really into baseball, and I was watching a lot of baseball anyways at that time. But when they would cut over to it and Bonds would be at bat, and it was just, well, everyone's got smartphones now, so I don't know how many people are going to have actual cameras with flashes at these games, but every single pitch – the whole park was just lighting up. Everyone was trying to capture that moment on camera. Uh-huh. It was pretty sick to watch. Now everyone's going to have their phones out just like looking like morons, just like trying to record the goal. Anyways, that'll be exciting. I think he gets it done probably next year.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think it'll be obviously it won't be 2023-24, but yeah, 2024-25. If he stays healthy and scores on his current pace that he has throughout his career, absolutely put it in the books. I think it'll happen.
Totally.
Well, Snail, anything else that you want to add before we wrap up this edition of the Skating Penguin Network mailbag?
Just we have one more. We're gonna have one come out on the first day, right? The first game of the season.
Tuesday. Yeah, it'll be the first mailbag. Assuming we get so. If you've been listening to our content, you've noticed that we've been putting out two episodes of the mailbag per week. Behind the scenes, we decided that in order to have more conversations, more in-depth conversations with the questions, we divided the mailbag into two, and that's what we're going to continue to do into the season. So if we get 20-plus questions for next week's mailbag, the first batch of questions will come out on that Tuesday, which will be the 10th. That'll be, game number one, Penguins versus Blackhawks. And in that mailbag, not in that mailbag. We'll have a separate episode, a separate little mini podcast that will come out on Tuesday, sort of previewing the season with Robbie and Snail and myself. We'll preview the season, talk about some headlines entering 2023-24, and so that'll sort of be the appetizer before the puck drops later that night. But yeah, this is one more mailbag to record and a little appetizer podcast, and then we'll be off and running.
And then, yeah, we'll it started, man. It's you can tell it smells like hockey season. Big, the first game, it's just such a treat having this Bedard kid playing Sid. They're calling it Sid versus the Kid.
Oh, that's clever. That's clever marketing.
Sid versus the Kid, man. That's just a great, I think the league did a hell of a job with whoever was behind that move, having the first game be against this Connor Bedard. So, dude, let's just get to it already. And then, yeah, looking forward to covering games with you guys. This will be my first go during the season as part of Skating Penguin Network.
Yeah, it is. Again, there's an excitement in the air that you can't just describe, and I think that started earlier this summer with the introduction of Kyle Dubas and what's come since then. So we will totally be here with you guys who are listening and watching on YouTube every step of the way. But until then, until next week, for Snail, for Robbie Noggle, I have been Garrett Bahana. Thank you so much for listening to another edition of the Skating Penguin Network mailbag, and we will talk to all of you again very soon.